Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Trina. Thank you so much for listening. We have a huge show for you today. We have two guests in our regular Train of Thought segment. This is episode 499 of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I wanted to make it special because I'm going to have something else next week for 500, I think. So I wanted to have a really good guest here as we close in on 500. And it worked out where I had the opportunity to chat with Tom Brady. Now, I want to give you guys full disclosure. I don't want to ever sort of act like, you know, I had some great relationship with Tom and was able to book him. It was through his partnership with Hertz. They gave me 10 minutes with Tom. Usually, obviously, when I have a guest, we go 40, 50 minutes. It's only 10 minutes, but the 99% of the interview is about Tom going into the Fox booth. So it's still worth your while, and it's still worth listening to Tom. He's literally the only person I would have done this for, because I have a rule with this podcast that I don't do 10 minute interviews, and I don't do 10 or 15 minute interviews when you want to plug for something, because those interviews are never good. And there's literally one person I would have broken the rule for, and that's Tom Brady. So that's what I did. So it's going to be 10 minutes of Tom Brady here at the top talking about going into the booth with Fox. Then we have on Jim Miller. Was my first guest when I took over hosting this podcast for Richard Deitch back in 2018. And Jim has a lot of great information about the NBA television rights, what's going on at ESPN, Pat McAfee, rights for UFC, what he thinks will happen there, Charles Barkley, would he ever do games for ESPN instead of studio? A lot of great stuff with Jim Miller on a bunch of sports media news and a lot of goings-ons with the NBA and ESPN as well. And then, of course, Sal Licata and our weekly Train of Thought segment closes out this episode of the podcast. Before we get to it, just a quick reminder, if you missed any recent episodes of SI Media with Jimmy Trina, go into the archives, check them out. Andrew Martian from The Athletic was on last week to break down the latest sports media news. Charles Barkley was on the pod 2 weeks ago. Kevin Harlan was on the podcast 3 weeks ago. So if you missed any of those episodes, go give them a listen. Subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Trina. Leave a review on Apple. Rate us on Apple. And that's it. So this is episode 499. Tom Brady, followed by Jim Miller, followed by Train of Thoughts. All right here, right now, on SI Media with Jimmy Trina. All right, joining me now, this is episode 499 of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Usually you save the big guns for 500, but I've got the biggest gun possible for 499. The GOAT. And he's going into the Fox booth next year, Tom Brady. Tom, how's it going?
Thanks, my man. $4.99 sounds like a discount or something. You know, $5, that seems like a lot. $4.99, you know, that now you're getting a steal.
I would have loved you for the 500th episode, but this was the day you can do this. So this is the day we're doing it. So
you had a chance to get a $4.99, then you could have popped someone in at the $4.99 slot, me at the 500.
No, I don't like this, Jimmy. No, I don't like to hold the podcast. I like to do it as soon as we can. So, all right. I've got about a billion questions for you. I'll probably get to like 10. So I'm going to go rapid fire. And we know we've got to talk about Hertz because you star in some new Hertz commercials. But this awesome. Is the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. And there is no bigger media story in this year than you joining the Fox booth. So I'm going to start with a very obvious question. We know what the salary is reported to be. Take that out of it. Why go into broadcasting?
Well, first of all, I love the sport. I love having an impact on football. I love being around a team, people. I love achieving at the highest level. I love the competition, sports. I love the way it brings people together. I love having a microphone that's going to reach 30 million people on Sundays a week. I love being a part of the best broadcast in sports. So I think for me, it was a no-brainer. And if you want to have an impact on people and you want to impact on a sport you love, then you've got to work toward that. So me staying involved in this part of my life and career is something that was very fun for me, and really engaging with the whole Fox broadcast team, Aaron, Kevin, Richie, Rich Russo, Eric Shanks, Brad Zager, the entire crew, meeting all the Fox talent has been just an awesome experience. My daughter is blowing up my Zoom right now. I'm sorry. Okay. Can I keep going and out? Can you call
me? No, you're fine. You're fine. Don't worry about it. It's all good. All right. Don't worry. I love that even Tom Brady has Zoom issues. It now makes you feel like one of us.
my Do Not Disturb is not working over here.
It never works on my phone either, believe me. How do you think, I mean, you had an interesting approach because you took a year off. How do you think that's going to help you for this season?
I mean, for me, it was the only way to do it. I realized that to come off a playing season and then to jump right into that, it's a whole nother discipline to learn. And I really wanted to take some time to watch, listen, learn, talk to people, people who I really see as the greatest at what they've done. And everyone really opened their arms to embrace me and phone calls. And there's still more that I'm going to make before the start of the season. And I'm just very grateful for all the people that kind of shared a lot of incredible nuggets, ways to succeed, that I'll be able to involve myself in as I go forward.
Give me what you think you'll be good at in the booth and what you think you might need to work on or learn or do a little better in the booth.
So I think the analysis of what I'm actually seeing will be relatively straightforward for me. It's kind of what I've done every day. I think the preparation is something that I'll really enjoy. I think the important part for me would be, how do I just continue to make it fun for people to enjoy the viewing experience? Sometimes I get a little too serious because I see myself as quarterback Tom Brady, as opposed to let's enjoy a great game of football Tom Brady. Sometimes I become maybe a little too critical. So I'm trying to make sure that I have the right tone. And, I was tough on my teammates. I was tough on Wes and Julian. I was tough on the running backs and the line. And I was fiery and competitive. And I just want to make sure that that doesn't I'm very specific of how I think the game should be played. And I want to see the game evolve and grow. So
that's fascinating for me to hear, because as someone who covers this, and I'll be like one of the dopes critiquing your performance throughout the year, is my criticism of analysts across sports for most of them. I think the only one I feel like who doesn't do this is Troy Aikman. But I feel like most analysts are, because a lot of them are ex-players, are afraid to criticize players and refs. And it's interesting to me that you think you might be too critical. So that's good to hear, because we at home see something and we think, okay, that was dumb, whether it was by a player or a ref. And you don't have to say it that way, but sometimes announcers just gloss over it. So I guess you're going to drop the hammer.
I think there's a high expectation of how I expect the game to be played, because I was there and I saw Coach Belichick and I saw Hall of Famers and I played with them and played against them and I played in big games. And there's just a certain expectation level that I see for really great performers. And I want to see these guys perform really well. But part of the contribution to make is, how do I help other people be successful as well? How can I play a role in seeing other people achieve their goals and cross the finish line? So what wisdom can I impart on the game, people, coaches, refs, fans, that they can take from the things that I've learned to say, hey, this is going to help me.
All right. One more on the broadcast and we'll get into Hurts, and hopefully I have time to a couple of fun questions. I've said this as soon as you made the announcement that you were going to become a broadcaster for Fox, I've said from day one, I think you're going to be tremendous, because you're going to tell us stuff we've never heard before, because you see the game in a way that no one else sees it. So no pressure, but I think you're going to be great. I think, though, that I don't know what percentage you want to put on it, but there's going to be a certain amount of people that, even if you are objectively great, no matter how good you are, they're going to hate you because you've beat their team's brains in for 20 years, whether it's a Jet fan, a Dolphin fan. So I'm just curious if you already have a plan for how you will handle feedback, criticism, response. I tell announcers all the time, don't go on Twitter, but people tell you stuff, even if you're not on Twitter. People are like, oh, did you see what this one said? So I'm just curious how you're going to go into it in terms of getting feedback and response from the public.
So I think that's a great part. And I think in a way, the 28 years of college and pro sports helped me develop a lot of thick skin. This is different than a scoreboard. As we know, there's no scoreboard in this. There's a lot of people that I talk to that say, I love Tony Romo and I can't stand so-and-so. And then I can't stand Chris Collinsworth. And so it's, I love Chris Collinsworth and I can't stand Troy Aikman. I love Troy Aikman. And it's like, guys, everyone has their own preference for what they like. And you're never going to please everybody. I think for all of us in this role, it's really about, am I satisfying the person that I'm looking in the mirror? Did I prepare hard? Did I put my best forward? Did I do this with the right intention? Did I give my best to the team that I work for? And did I go out there and give my best to the audience? And if I did that, I'm good. Like, you may not like it. I understand. It's okay. But, you know, I'm just giving you what I, my commentating, my analysis. So it's really in the end, like, kind of like I played quarterback, was about satisfying me. If I could have had a bad outcome, but if I thought the process was good, all right, let me just work on the process to get the outcome I want.
Right.
If the outcome was great, it was, what did I do right that enabled me to be prepared and be successful in the moment?
All right. So you're starring in it. You've been with Hertz forever, it seems like.
Yeah.
There's a new spot you're in where you play a game show host.
Yeah.
So
you like it?
I do. I like seeing your acting. I think you are phenomenal. You know, everyone gives a lot of credit to like Travis Kelce and the recent and Peyton who've done Saturday Night Live. Your Saturday Night Live was so long ago, but you were great on it, which, like I said, I know I need you on for a longer time. Yeah, so we can get that. Tell me this. You play a game show host. If you could be on any game show ever as a contestant, past or present, what would it be?
Oh, man, good question. Probably Family Feud. Probably my favorite one. Quick answers, quick responses, fun, good energy. One of the great ones. But yeah, that Hertz ad was phenomenal.
Are you old enough to remember the Richard Dawson version, or do you only know the Steve Harvey version?
Okay. Absolutely. Oh yeah, please. It was all that Richard Dawson.
That was wild. Kissing all the contestants. That would never fly today, that's for sure. With the Hertz spots, like I said, you're great in those spots. We've seen you do so much acting over the years.
Yeah.
Movies and everything. How much do you like acting, and would that ever, like, do you only try to pick like little roles? Would you ever like do like a feature film or something like that?
I've gotten used to probably the camera a lot more. And then even in this particular campaign, we did the Let's Go campaign, which I loved, but there was a comedic tone to all that we did. This one was a little more customer focused. We talked about skipping the line, earning points, making a really fast, seamless experience for the Hertz customer. So I think for me, it was, how do we take all these messaging that we really want and promote it in a really fun way? People are going to be engaged. They're going to enjoy the experience. They're going to obviously have a great experience renting with Hertz, but how can we give something to the audience that they really want? And I think we accomplished it.
Great. One last question I got to ask, because Charles Barkley was on this podcast 2 weeks ago, and I asked if you had reached out to him for any broadcasting advice. And he said that instead of that, he told me a story that he told you at a golf tournament that he liked your watch, and then you gave him the watch. Is that something you do regularly? And do you know that that was a Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm plot?
No, I didn't know any of that. Okay. I love Charles. He's been a great friend and supporter. So I don't know, man, if I could do nice things for people, then I try to do it.
Got it. Well, I appreciate you doing this. I know you're busy and you have the thing tonight. So enjoy that. And like I said, hopefully I can get you on for, you go in depth here, and good luck in the booth.
Thanks, Jimmy. Good All luck, right. man.
Thank appreciate you. Take it. It easy.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks, Tom. All right, joining me now, he's an SI Media podcast regular. There is a special reason he's on the show today. He is author, writer, podcast host, does it all, knows everything about ESPN and HBO, Jim Miller. Jim, how's it going?
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm well. Had to have you on because next week is the 500th episode of the SI Media podcast. And you were my first guest when I took over the podcast from Richard Deitch in 2018. So since you were the first guest, I figured, you know, you have to mark number 500 with something special. And I got something for next week. So that's why I had to have you on this week. So
that's great. Was ESPN around in 2006?
I think, you know, the ESPN book is what I think started our relationship. But as I've told you many a time, it's the SNL book was my first foray into Jim Miller, which I still to this day is like the best book I've ever read. So
thank you.
So thank you for being so good to the pod over the years. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And the listeners always love hearing you and listening to you. And there's some good things going on right now. We'll start with, I mean, it feels like we're beating it to a dead horse because it's been going on for so long, but I want to get into the NBA stuff, but a little differently. I mean, nothing's official, but we all know what's going to happen. And I thought it was very interesting because I feel like this is in your wheelhouse. There was a report, I believe it was Wall Street Journal that had it, that, you know, NBC is going to get the NBA back. They're throwing huge money at the NBA. And I guess there's a little riff maybe with the entertainment side of NBC. Is there anything you can share about that or what's going on there?
Sorry to start off on a dead note, but no, I ain't got no dog in that fight.
Is it, you know, but you can't say?
No, I really, we should have.
Well, let's do it this way. I mean, in this day and age of broadcast, where the only thing people care about in terms of broadcast television now is live sports and everything else is pretty much dead outside of a couple of things, maybe. I could see where an entertainment side of any network might feel a little annoyed that so much money would go to live sports. But if you're a network, what can you do to survive these days except live sports?
Look, it's been this way for a long time. I mean, I think one of the reasons why Michael Eisner, started the won a full year of the NFL for ESPN, which was a huge, huge expenditure at that time, is because, there's no guarantee that Desperate Housewives is going to be on 4 years from now. I mean, let's go back in time. But you know that the Cowboys and the Eagles are going to be on, and it's going to rate. There have been, as development costs have increased, and marketing in particular, because it's such a crowded universe. I mean, some of these shows, particularly at the stream, they can cost $100 million. You spend $100 million on a show that comes and goes and disappears into thin air, and all of a sudden you're talking about real money. And right. I think that, for that reason, it's one of the reasons why sports rights have escalated so much, because it is a dependent variable. And I think that that's really important to keep in mind.
I thought it was funny, not funny in the standpoint of you never want to see any human being ever lose a job. Maybe ironic is the word, that, a tweet came down Tuesday night saying that due to budget cuts at NBC, Seth Meyers has to get rid of his live band. And it's like you're the Seth Meyers show and they're telling you this budget cuts, you got to get rid of your live band. But here's $2.6 million for the NBA. It's sad that people are out of a job, but it's also comical when you see it break down that way.
Well, look, it's all about triage. It's all about choices. It always has been. But I think that the bottom line is that sports is increasingly vital to everybody's content streams. And there's no chance of slowing down. Now we have a big gap after the NBA because there's UFC coming up. And then for a while they're due in large part to like the era that John Skipper inaugurated, which is longer term deals. There's going to be kind of a quiet period, which again is kind of shocking that WBD was somewhat passive with the NBA.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. Like I said, nothing's official, but WBD is going to lose the NBA. It's just the writing's on the wall. And a lot of, there's speculation about whether it makes sense for them financially. There's speculation about David Zaslav saying they don't need the NBA and how much Adam Silver reacts to that. There's the thought that NBC and Amazon can offer broadcast and streaming, whereas WBD can only offer cable. Cable is dying faster than anything. At the end of the day, why do you think WBD is about to lose the NBA?
Well, first of all, if David had said we don't need the NBA when David Stern was commissioner, he would have gotten voted off the island. There wouldn't have been even negotiations. Adam is a compassionate, lovely guy who, probably has a lot more patience than David Stern would have done, but David Stern would have probably just X'd him out. I don't think that David Zaslav thought that NBC was going to come up to such a big number. I think that's probably, what was going on. They did. And now he's in a position where he's either trying to somehow create a fourth window, which would be incredibly problematic, go the legal route and terms of like what matching offers means and try and threaten the NBA that way, or C, talk to a bunch of journalists, like one of our friends at Puck, and somehow create this bizarre alternative narrative that they don't really need it. They spent a ton of money on four NASCAR races, which quite frankly don't move the needle in any way. No offense against NASCAR and NASCAR fans.
Right.
But when you look at it holistically, I don't get it. I really don't. And, you know.
And now they've added the French Open as well. Do you? So you don't think it's just simply about money?
Well, I think he didn't want to pay what, and remember they had an exclusive window. So I don't think he wanted to pay such a high premium.
Right.
And that's why I said he didn't think he would have to, because nobody else would come up to that level. And that's tough. That's tough. Yeah. I mean, look, you can write all the articles you want in the world to say, well, WBD doesn't need the NBA, but they've been inextricably linked. And it's not great to have Charles Barkley out there saying this stuff that he says, which is true. And I think it's going to be a real loss for them if they don't wind up getting it somehow.
How about Barkley on this very podcast a couple of weeks ago telling me that he's only had two conversations ever with David Zaslav? And one was like an upfront where they just said hello and Zaslav didn't give them any update information or say a word about what's going on.
You know, I heard that, of course. I listened to it. And, you know, it strikes me as odd on two levels. One is just in terms of the business, right? I mean, Charles Barkley is somebody you pay a lot of money to. It's a visible face of, you know, your sport. But the second thing is that David Zaslav himself is like Mr. Fellow Well Met. He is an incredibly gregarious, outgoing, he hosted this party at Cannes. He goes, he's on the floor seats at the Knicks and shaking hands with everybody. He's always been incredibly personable. And, the camaraderie and stuff that he creates and participates in is significant. So I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I mean, if Barkley had said, you know, I've had 10 lunches with David Zaslav, I can't believe he's doing this to me, that I would believe.
Right.
It seems, as Jerry would say, a tad askew.
A tad askew, yes. Put a bow on WBD. They lose the NBA. In the landscape of cable, how bad is it? How much trouble are they in?
Well, this is why Jeff Bukas and the board sold Time Warner, because they could see what was happening to the cable bundle. And, you know, there was no real replacement except for stepping in and spending a fortune in the streaming world, which, as we've seen, there are no guarantees. Right. So this is something that we've known all about for a long time. And it's really coming home to roost now. But that's what these people are paid to do, which is to come up with other revenue streams and create a new ecosystem. Meanwhile, the Warner Brothers stock is under 10. I think, you know, at this point, only friends and relatives own it. And that's down, 60% or something? It's really sad to watch this. I think in terms of ROI from 12/10 to 2017, nobody had better ROE than Time Warner.
Wow. ROE. All right. You mentioned Barkley. Obviously, NBC, Amazon, and ESPN are all going to make offers to Barkley. I would assume that. You would assume that?
I don't think we're going to find him by the freeway with a hat on.
How much of a push do you think ESPN would make for him? ESPN has sort of tried to tighten the budget, but they went out and they got McAfee, they got Buck and Aikman. So curious what you think about that.
I mean, those were big checks that they wrote. Now, the thought has always been they spent a ton of money on Monday Night Football. And so, what is it, 35 whatever million bucks on Troy and Joe, it's, you know, that's the cost that's doing it. It also keeps the league happy. I don't think ESPN is going to run out and get Van Gundy back, even though a lot of people miss him because he makes the league carsick. And you don't want to start off a relationship with the league, you know, particularly with Adam, you know, from that position. So remember, look, if you go back a little bit, I'm sorry if this is a longer answer.
No, that's okay.
The ESPN experiment with basketball shoulder programming has been difficult at best, right? I mean, so Turner has this, it's so ridiculous because Turner has one of the great shoulder programs of all time, right? With their NBA show. And ESPN, remember Sage Steele, remember Bill Simmons, remember Michelle Beadle, remember Magic Johnson. I mean, that was like a ground war in Southeast Asia. It was like, you know, and bad food in small portions because it didn't work and it kept all of us, you know, with an endless supply of gossip and turnaround and different messaging.
And it's always changing. It's always changing. I mean, which is, that's a bad sign in TV when it's always changing.
Right. Especially when you sign up talent to like 5-year deals. And then all of a sudden it's like what Sage was doing, the noon sports center at some point, but she's getting paid off of a huge deal, you know, that was about the NBA. Mm-hmm. So I think to cut to the essence of your question, ESPN has to create a new era of NBA coverage. This is the moment in time, this new package. I mean, they have some great people, but they have some things that aren't working. And most importantly, there is the perception that they can't solve this problem. And so, look, I have a lot of faith in Burke Magnus, who is Jimmy's number two, but I think that this is going to be, you know, formidable. And it's also going to be a central challenge to whoever takes Norby's job.
You know, I just had a thought that I cannot believe I haven't thought of once in these past several weeks. And I just had it while you were speaking. I apologize for cutting you off, but I want to, you know, I just thought of it, you know. Obviously, everyone thinks the ESPN studio show has had its issues. You just outlined them. Now they have an issue with their game broadcast. They have the best play-by-play guy in Mike Breen, but they fired Van Gundy, which they should have never done. Doc Rivers, Reddick, Doris Fine. You know, they could solve that problem with Barkley and just have Barkley work with Breen. I don't know if Charles would do that. I think, you know, Charles told me he doesn't want to work that hard, whatever new deal he gets, but you add some zeros and someone will work harder.
That's, you know, a lot of travel.
Yeah.
Well,
regular season, he can half-ass it during the regular season. You really just need him for the postseason.
I mean, look, if they were to do that, then I would say, please, only the two of them, not right. Three. I hate three-man boosts. I just think it's ridiculous. If Charles was willing to do that and work at it, then maybe that's a problem. But remember something, you're still going to have to go somewhere before the game, halftime, and after the game.
But I think the issue with Charles in studio is if it's not going to be inside the NBA with the same cast and the same crew, there's always going to be comparisons. So if you're going to stick Charles on an ESPN pregame show with Stephen A or whoever, people are going to complain. They're going to say it's not the same. Where's Kenny and Shaq? You're going to put yourself behind the eight ball if you put them on any pregame show, because you don't do that. You don't, if you know, you don't go put Jerry Seinfeld on another show. You don't go put, this is with a different cast. It doesn't work that way. You know, Mike and the Mad Dog broke up. They didn't take on new partners. So I think, now I'm thinking about it, the best thing would be for ESPN to hire Charles to work with Mike Breen and do the games, but that's just me.
Also, remember, Stephen A's deal is coming up. In fact, I think there have been preliminary talks already that have started. He's looking for a big, big number. And I also feel, given the content world, he doesn't even have to have another offer from one entity for that big number. I think what ESPN is up against is the possibility that WME could go out and create an architecture where Stephen A has a podcast, that this, a deal with this, a deal with that, or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's $20 million a year, you know? So whether or not all the work that we're talking about that ESPN has to do in terms of basketball is going to require a lot of money for Stephen A, let alone Charles.
Here's a question for you. You're ESPN and you can only have one. You want Charles Barkley or Stephen A. Smith?
Well, no offense against Sir Charles, but I think given the fact that ESPN is on for 8,760 hours a year, you got to go with Stephen A. because he also supplies tonnage, right? I mean, First Take is a behemoth. It delivers young eyeballs 10 hours a week, you know, even more. And I think that that's a real benefit to Stephen A's pace, so to speak.
Do you think there's any chance he wouldn't return to ESPN? You think ESPN coughs up what he wants?
You know, to tell you the truth, at this point, I'm not sure, because I do believe that there are enough exigencies, there are enough possibilities, like I said, that Stephen A can get outside of ESPN and even outside a deal, an exclusive deal with another network that could make him very happy and very rich.
And also, does it come to a point where there's a number that Stephen A wants that doesn't make, like you mentioned the tonnage and how much and First Take and the NBA show, but is there a number where it comes to a point where ESPN's like, okay, yes, he does all this, but that number doesn't make sense for us. Sort of like the way it's playing out with WBD and the NBA.
Yeah, maybe that number is $20 million a year.
Right.
Although I don't have that confirmed, but I'd say that, remember. And then also there's the question of UFC rights coming up again. I have a tendency to think that that might wind up at Netflix and ESPN may save some, quote unquote, save some money bypassing
that. That would make sense with Netflix getting in bed with Monday Night Raw and the WWE because they're the same company now. So, yeah.
Yeah.
One more on Barkley. Just from take out the actual role, just money and only money. Would Amazon be in the best position to give him the biggest check out of Amazon, NBC, and ESPN?
Well, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But as we see with Apple, I mean, Apple's got enough money in its couch cushions to blow everybody else away.
Right. Right. And Amazon's the same boat.
And so whether or not they do that or not is another story.
Right. But
they've certainly done it with the NFL and now with the NBA. And, you know, so we'll see what they think.
One last thing on ESPN. It seems like every few months when I have you on, there's some sort of something involved with Pat McAfee. The latest was a week ago. He calls Caitlin Clark. I don't think he called her. I think he was trying to emulate what the players are calling her or thinking about it, because a player had called her a bitch on the court. So then he's called her. He said she was a white bitch, and it was a whole big brouhaha. And it was already sort of when Pat went to ESPN, it did seem like some of the ESPN old guard not thrilled. So now here we are, June 12, 2024. Where do we stand with sort of the ESPN relationship with Pat?
Well, first of all, there's been a standoff, right? Because one of the old guard, in fact, the personification of the old guard and somebody who didn't particularly like Pat McAfee was Normie. And I think, we don't have to be in Bristol this morning to see that Normie's not coming to work. So I think that kind of decision was already made. But look, ESPN, I mean, aside from the Barstool Sports experiment, which was a true disaster and one of the quickest turnabouts in its history, they still need to be off linear, I mean, off cable and being on YouTube and whatever. And Pat is a great example of that. I don't know why people... I mean, I agree with you. I don't think he was trying to demean Caitlin. Right. He was he was speaking like they speak. And I don't know why people are constantly surprised by anything he says. I mean, that's what you get. And obviously a lot of people like it. And that's who he is. I mean, what is Pat going to say about Caitlin? She seems like a majestic, super interesting young woman who has some philosophical. I mean, come on, man. It's like that's what you get, that's what you buy into, and that's what they want.
I said this last week. I because when the cheap shot foul happened, that caused the entire thing. Right before it happened, the player called Caitlin Clark a bitch. So I thought that's what Pat was playing off of, but people didn't want to see it that way. They just, it does feel like people want to get there. It's like, you know, there's a lot of gotcha going on, I think, with Pat. I think that's.
Yeah, I think people look, it's a hardy perennial in the media world, right? People become uber famous and they sign these big deals. And then there's a whole cadre of people who want to knock them down, either jealousy, envy, or they just don't think they deserve it. And so there are some people who just want to spend their days slinging arrows at the guy. But I mean, seems to me he's pretty coated in Teflon for now. And yeah. I think, you know, what's going on with the WNBA is far more interesting, which is that we're finally moving from, it's kind of like the league, you know, for many years. You just said the WNBA, even though there were Lisa Leslie and all these other, but, you know, and then there were teams or stuff. We're actually moving. Caitlin is a Pied Piper and helping the league move to more stars and people paying more attention to stars and then the teams that they're on, rather than, you know, I'm a Aces fan or I'm a fan or whatever. And so I think that this, all this chatter and all this attention is probably really good for the league. I think the racial undercurrents that are there, and that might be more profound than we even know, I'm just, you know, guessing, are something that's going to have to be examined at some point.
Yeah, it does seem like it's going to get worse before it gets better with her. Because I do think, I said this last week too, I think one of the things that's at play here is that she's not taking the bait. She hasn't given one press conference or said one word to generate any controversy. The controversy is all surrounding her and swirling her in just what she can control and what she says. She's not taking any bait yet. So I think it's going to be very interesting, because I do feel like I wonder if some of this is, let's see if we'll get her to snap at some point.
Yeah, that she seems pretty disciplined, particularly for a young woman. Yeah. And I think she deserves a lot of credit for that.
Do you know how mad NBC was that she wasn't on the Olympic team?
I don't, but can't be, you know, nothing to be thrilled about.
No, for sure. One last thing on ESPN here. It didn't get a ton of attention, but they hired Jason Kelce for their Monday night program. RG3 is out. Jason Kelce's in. It does seem like he's... Now, you know, I think this would have been even if his brother wasn't dating Taylor Swift, but I feel like in recent years, he's one of the people that's got like the highest buzz, ceiling, excitement level of someone going into TV. Do you know what the ESPN mindset is in Bristol about hiring Jason Kelce and how high they are on him?
Oh, wait, let me see. Oh, yes. Yeah, my Eagles hat on. So.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah.
You don't have to sell me, man. Yeah. I mean, look, I think, independent of his brother's relationship with Taylor Swift, we've been around him for a long time. He's a magnificent guy, and his principles of being an athlete on the field and his principles of being a father and husband at home. And he's just got this infectious enthusiasm. He's everything you would want an athlete to be. And I think ESPN was smart to grab him. I think they're excited about him. You know, I just don't see him, no offense against Drew Brees, but he's not going to be one of these guys that, you know, well, will he work or whatever? He's just, I think he's going to work, and I think he's going to be terrific. And I know they're looking forward to it.
I just interviewed Brady. How do you think what's the buzz on him? I know supposedly he's doing a lot of practice and a lot of work. Are you hearing anything about Tom and his Fox debut coming up in September?
I mean, good luck. I mean, it's one thing to get $30 million to sit there and have people roast your family and your wife and everything else. But it's another to, I mean, look, he's going to be on the hot seat. He knows it, but he wanted to do it. Again, it's harder than people realize. And I mean, Troy, listen, think about it. There have been, I mean, obviously Madden was a coach at Troy. I mean, there have been people that have been in the booth under, you know, great acclaim, and then it doesn't happen. I mean, you could go all the way back to Joe Theismann, who I guess, you know, at some point worked, but didn't really work, wasn't a breakthrough or whatever. The bottom line is it's much harder than people think. And that's why,
be good.
That's why I think Peyton and Eli have such a great gig with the Manning cast, because it has a different set of skills. They're right. Basically, they don't have to learn to do something. This is what they were doing when they were sitting next to each other watching games at home.
Got it. All right, let's transition into this, because I said Jim's on. He was my first guest when I took over the SI Media podcast from Richard Deitch in 2018. And had to have him on for episode 499. And then it just turned out by luck that he's on the exact same week of the 17th anniversary of the Sopranos finale. And if you know, nobody Crazy. Knows the Sopranos better than Jim. Had a podcast about the Sopranos. Has your view of the finale changed over the years as we get further away from it? Because I think that's happened to some people. I'm curious about you.
No, I mean, in my HBO book, I wrote about it, and I tried to get a real, like, you know, distance perspective from a lot of people. It hasn't changed. And quite frankly, I still think it's brilliant. I know it pissed off a lot of people. A lot of people thought their cable was out, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, we're still talking about it 17 years later.
Right.
And what David Chase did, was it gave us the opportunity in our own individual minds to finish it. So I know people that have, like, literally, it's almost like the Zapruder film, November 22nd, 1963. Well, that guy walked into the bathroom. He was going to come out. The guy, you know, it was going to be a 3-week fight. Like, whatever knocks you out. That's great. I just love the fact that that image of the four of them in the booth, onion rings in their mouths. And, you know, he did a great job of building up the tension, but going out on that is just, for me, elegant.
Do you think, you know him very, very well. Do you think he'll ever, ever say, yes, Tony dies, no, Tony doesn't die? Because that's what the public wants more than anything. Not me, but the public, I'll put it on them. And he clearly has no interest in doing that, but do you think he'd ever break down and do it?
No. And by the way, this idea did not come to him like the week before. And so if the idea, let's just play it out for a second. If the idea how to end it came to him, the very essence, the DNA of the idea means that you don't think beyond that. And I could even imagine David hooked up to a polygraph saying, I don't even know.
Right.
Because the magic, you know, I mean, look, when you think about great endings, obviously 6 Feet Under, the last episode of 6 Feet Under is, you know, on Mount Rushmore. Mad Men for sure. Although I think there were a couple of us when, I don't mean as a humble brag, but once they went to that retreat, we started to think about the Coke commercial, but it was still magnificent and glorious and fantastic.
Yeah.
The Sopranos is right up there because of what he created in that last moment. And so, you know, he may not even know.
That's what The biggest theory to come out is that he whacked the audience, which I don't believe that for one second, but that theory picked up a lot of steam in recent years.
I personally, look, I love, you know how much I love the show. I wrote, I couldn't stop writing about it in the book, but I think he whacked the audience with Melfi. I think that her ending moments with Tony and the way she dismissed him was really unfair to her character and a real screw you to the audience.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what David's relationship with therapists are like, but boy, that was tough. But I don't think he'd whack the audience with the final scene.
Did you know there's this thing on TikTok with all these young kids who don't know anything, where a lot of these young people who are watching it for the first time, the series, basically brag about how they skip all the Tony and Melfi scenes. I mean, talk about just...
What?
Yeah. Yeah. The perfect summation of that generation being so dumb and just not getting it, that they would skip those scenes. Yeah.
Okay. I think I'll watch The Deer Hunter and skip through all the Vietnam. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, look, remember the New Yorker cover when Sopranos went off the air was Tony walking out of Melfi's office.
Right.
It is foundationally, I mean, look, I love Lorraine, but foundationally, it is the heart of that show.
Absolutely. I don't know how you can watch like this, the episode when AJ tries to kill himself and not watch the Tony Melfi scenes in that. Like, I don't get it. And I think some of the greatest scenes were, it only happened in a couple episodes. They didn't do, I wish they would have done it longer. There were a couple of episodes where Tony and Carmela went to Melfi together.
Oh yeah.
And those were just, you know.
No. And also the idea that after she was raped, she had in Tony this unbelievable way of getting back at this guy, right? She knows who he is. She knows where he works. Right. That moral quandary that the writers set up, I think, is one of the great, stark, guttural moral quandaries I've ever seen a character
with. Absolutely. Let me ask you this before I let you go. Curb finished up. We're a few months now past the finale. Do you know if Larry was happy with how it all wrapped up? Was he happy with the season, the finale, the feedback? The feedback was really good.
I believe he was. I mean, look, I'm not quoting him here, but I believe he was. And I also feel like, again, the brilliance of it is that it was a twofer. Because in some ways, and it, you know, it spoke to, I'm wearing my Art Vandelay shirt today.
Yes. Importer-exporter.
I wasn't intended.
If I had to pick one single moment of Seinfeld where I laughed the hardest, it might have been George running out of the bathroom, pants at his ankles, screaming to Jerry when he answers the phone, "Say Vandelay Industries, say Vandelay Industries."
Vandelay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But go ahead about Curb.
Because Jerry's response is, and you want to be my...
My latex husband, Or.
But I feel like, I think Larry pulled it off. Yeah. I think he's probably relieved that he doesn't have to do it anymore.
Right.
Although a lot of people will miss it. But yeah, it was a twofer because it really did go all the way back to Seinfeld. And I thought Jerry was terrific with it. By the way, the earlier season that Jerry was on with the table read.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean,
just the idea that Bob Weinstein joke to Larry and Jerry, which Jerry didn't know was coming, by the way.
Right, right.
He heard it for the first time.
Right.
Was, I mean, stupendous.
That's probably their best season. That whole storyline, I mean, with Larry playing George and Jason Alexander was so good in that. And that worked.
Wanted to get Cheryl back.
Perfect. Right. Leon seeing Kramer for the first time. I mean, there were so many phenomenal moments of that series.
Right. Groat's disease, man. Groat's disease.
Yeah. And there was a great where George borrows Larry's pen and then he's putting the pen in his ear and everything about it was so good.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, was that the debut of Mocha Joe? Mocha Joe was heavily involved in that because Larry didn't tip Mocha Joe, and then him and Jerry start arguing about whether he's supposed to tip.
A lot of Mocha Joe.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Jim, appreciate you coming on. As I said, thank you so much for the support over the years. Really, thank you. I appreciate it. And it's been great having you as a staple of the pod, and I appreciate it.
Anytime. All right,
take care. Thank you. All right, joining me now, as he does every week for our Train of Thoughts segment from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Licata. Sal, how the hell are you?
Actually, pretty well. As we're mid-June, I'm enjoying the weather. I'm getting excited about the summer.
In New York, we get maybe 2 weeks where it's hot but not humid. So you have to like take full advantage and enjoy it. Because once late June comes, then it's just humid every day and it's not enjoyable.
Humidity is the worst. So it's been pretty nice so far. Yankees are rolling. Mets still suck, but everything's going on. I don't want to rush the summer away, but I could feel football coming soon.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not there yet. I'm not even close to being there. We haven't even gone to the pool yet. Once the, you know, well, I got to get some summer activities in.
I get it, but mini camp happening start getting me in the mood for football a little bit. I'm not rushing the summer away, believe me. I want to enjoy it. It's not even 4th of July.
We have Father's Day this weekend.
Yeah.
Any plans?
No, actually, now that I think about it. We were just in Saratoga for the Belmont Stakes this past weekend, so this is probably going to be a weekend. Yeah, plans like DMV. I've got Verizon coming to upgrade the internet or install the internet. So no plans, though, like outside of that.
How did your betting go at Belmont?
Annoying, because actually you like this. I didn't bet a lot. I purposely went there with, like, we just wanted to enjoy the races. And I had, let's say, $80 in cash on me. And I wanted to try to just use that throughout the course of the day. I'm not betting every race. I'm hanging out with my wife and daughter, or friends are there, whatever. But the problem is I was down to $13 in cash for the Belmont. And all week long, I loved the number six horse. Loved the number six horse. But because the prior race, I bet like an exacta box and a win bet, and I'm only down to $13. Now I'm thinking, okay, I like the six. Everybody's saying the nine is the favorite. Let me exact a box 6-9, and that was my. I did a $2 exact a box 6-9-4, and then I did a $1 triple 6-9-4, I think, and the six of course wins, and I have nothing to show for it because I didn't bet a simple even $10 win bet. It was 17-1, so it was annoying.
Wait a second. Let me get this straight.
Yeah,
you like the six horse?
Yes.
The six horse was a 17-1 odds.
Yeah,
and the six horse won.
Yes.
But you didn't have one wager with the six horse straight up.
Correct. To win.
Oh,
correct.
My God. What a debacle.
I know. It's like the only result that, honestly, I don't know what I was thinking prior to making that bet, because usually I'm like, all right, what's going to cause me the least pain? Like if this horse wins and I don't bet it, I'm going to be pissed off. But I guess I just wasn't thinking that. I was just thinking, all right, he's probably not going to win anyway. Maybe he finishes second and, you know, the favorite one, whatever. So, no, I ended up regretting it. And if I had the extra $10, I would have 100% placed a $10 win bet, but I didn't have it on me. I didn't go to the ATM, and that's that.
What I find fascinating about you is no matter what sport you bet, whether it's the NFL, the NBA, horse racing, you're an animal.
Yeah. Well, what There's do you no mean? How is it an animal in this regard?
Because you like the six horse.
Yeah.
And you didn't have one bet with this of just betting the six horse. You're doing, I don't even know what the exact box is, this, that, okay. 6-9-4. You got to, I'm saying if you're going to do all that, but you like the six horse, you've got to make at least a $10 bet on the six horse standalone.
You're right. And generally, but then that's how you get in trouble. So I bet two ways. I either pick one horse to win, or at least finish in the money, win, place, or show, or I pick multiple horses and box them, meaning that they have to finish, let's say, three horses first and second. So now I have three horses, but they could finish in any order, first and second. Generally, I would do both, but the more you do that, the more money it costs. And in this particular case, I didn't feel like going to the ATM because that could lead to more trouble. And you're right. Like, ultimately, it's just bad luck again. So even though I had the right horse, a 17-1 shot, I am a bad gambler and didn't pick the thing to win straight up. Just so annoying.
So you lost $80.
For the day, yeah, roughly around that.
That's not bad. That's not bad. No. Especially for you. Like, that's not bad at all.
Right.
All right. So Saratoga this weekend was what you did.
Yeah.
I was into the Yankee-Dodger series, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I said this on Twitter. And I think you agree with me. Whatever game it was, I forgot what night, Sunday, I think, or maybe it was Saturday. I just can't believe we're still doing the runner on second base to start extra innings. I cannot believe how dumb that is. It just,
you don't like
and
that.
When I said that on Twitter, I got so many responses from people I ended up muting going, oh, you want 15 inning games? Yeah, once or twice a year, I'll take a 15. Like, it wasn't like you had a 15 inning game every week. Maybe you had one a year, two tops. Yeah, I'll take it. Instead of here's what I don't like. I don't like gimmicks. And that's a gimmick.
There's even the fans of it. And I understand there are a lot of fans of it, specifically the people who cover baseball, because it guarantees you the game goes quicker. But whether you like this for whatever reason, you cannot, or don't like it, whatever, you cannot argue it is a completely different game.
Yes.
The game of baseball is different from innings 1 through 9 than it is with the ghost runner, whatever you want to label it, being put on base to start extra innings.
Right. And here's what kills me about it.
It cheapens. If I'm not mistaken,
100% cheapens it. That's exactly right. And I'm trying to remember what night it was, but what I don't
Friday.
Like
it was Friday night.
Okay, so that's okay. So here's what I don't like about that. On Friday night, it was 0-0.
Right, I think it was Friday, not Saturday.
It was 0-0, and then you put a runner on second base. Gimmick.
Right.
I don't like gimmicks.
Yeah, it just in a game that it's impossible to score a run, you're now giving the teams essentially
right.
at least a run. Like, you got to right. be pathetic to not score a run in that spot.
Right. Did you see the – do you follow Buster Olney on Twitter?
I don't, but I did see about the hack job, yeah.
How come you don't follow Buster Olney on Twitter?
I don't think that I do. I just – I don't want to
That hear was one mouth. Of the – I didn't – I don't want to make light of someone getting hacked because it's a pain in the ass, and but, like, that was one of the more entertaining hacks. But what the guy did who hacked him was he put out all this, I don't know what it is, crypto, maybe, yeah. whatever that stuff is. Then he started putting out the fake trades. He should have put out the fake trades first because then people would have believed it and
right.
it would have been better anarchy. So,
right.
I felt bad for, after a while, like I felt bad for Buster. Then it stopped being funny at some point, and I'm like, oh my God, this poor
did
guy.
Did he get it back?
Yeah, I believe so.
That,
actually, that's a good
I
question.
There.
I should check.
I was talking to somebody in the SNY newsroom yesterday, and my God, like the anxiety that I would be having had this happen to me would be through the roof.
Yeah, he got it back. He got it back. It was definitely one of the more aggressive hackings I've ever seen.
Yeah.
All right. Tuesday, they released the cover for the next Madden game. Christian McCaffrey's on it. How big of a Madden guy were you back in the day? I would imagine you were huge. I'm going to predict that.
Yes, very much so. Almost from since its inception, which I want to say was on Sega Genesis. Well, maybe it actually had something on a different system, but I remember it's Sega Genesis around 92, 93. Honestly, right. like it taught me a lot about football. I didn't play football. So as far as the plays and the play design and those things, I learned a lot from playing those games, but I went from, let's say, 92 or 93 till 2007 when Sean Alexander was on the cover of Madden. That was the last year I really stopped
right.
buying new stuff.
See, I think I was out of video games by the time the Madden thing, like I played it early on, but I don't think I played it for long. I think like I was out of it by the time it exploded. For me, it was all about Tecmo Bowl.
Right. Love that.
I loved Tecmo Bowl.
Super Tecmo Bowl?
I think it just, I like the regular the best.
Okay, now you were a Nintendo guy, I know that. You and I have played Double Dribble many times or whatever. Did you have Sega Genesis or no?
Yes.
Okay, Super Nintendo or no?
Not super. I think we went from Nintendo to Genesis.
Same thing. I did the same thing. And then did you stop with that or did you get like PlayStation?
Yeah.
Or
no, that was it for me. That was
right.
it
for me. Right. So I went PlayStation, I think PlayStation 2. But even by then, it was like, that was it. So yeah, Madden was a thing I think on Genesis back then when like NHL came out, which is a great game, NHL 93.
But what I loved about those, especially, I loved the coaching. Like, I really thought I was an offensive coordinator. I couldn't care less about playing the game. I just wanted to call the plays.
All right. Right. Run the ball to run right. the clock out to secure a win. I love that.
My best friend from high school, my friend Brett, would like get infuriated and not want to play because I would run the goal line package from like the 50-yard line and then break off. Like, or I'd play like field goal defense when he had the ball like at his own 20 and he would get so mad. But I was always out coaching. Always out coaching. All right. On Monday was the 17th anniversary of the Sopranos finale. Where were you? Do you remember where you were, how you watched it, what the setting was, and what you thought when it went black?
I had recently just broken up with a girlfriend that I was living with in the city. So I was like during the season watching shows at her apartment. I was depressed and sad and at home with my parents, who were also fans of the show, my dad specifically, watching on the couch at home. And when it faded to black, probably like many others, I jumped up and said, "What the fuck is going on? What happened? Would you not pay the bills? What?" So I was at home watching with my family.
And has your opinion of the finale changed over the years as 17 years have passed? Because in the beginning, everyone was confused. Now, I don't know if people got intellectual about it. I have my own thoughts on it, but have you changed your opinion? Like, what was it then and what is it now?
I felt incomplete and let down. Then I remember feeling anxious in the moments leading up to the end scene. Like, oh my God, what's going to happen? How's this going to end? And I don't deal with finales well. Like, I just hate the finality of it. But I remember being like, what the hell? And I felt like they left a lot on the table. In years past, I think I've understood it a little bit more. I don't necessarily love it, but I've become understanding of why he did that and left it up to the imagination. You liked it? Then how'd you feel about it?
I don't think I liked it in that very first minute. And then I do like the fact that it's such a talking point now and there are all these theories. I mean, there are like 20 page posts about it and there's 1 hour long YouTube videos about it. I hate the theory that it was David Chase killing the audience, which is out. That theory is out there. Like that to me is, I don't like that. The audience has nothing to do with the show. So that I don't like. I think the intention of him was to have the audience think Tony got killed. That's what all the clues led up to. What would have been fascinating is what they would have done if poor James Gandolfini didn't pass away at such a young age, because everything gets made into a movie. Like if you just look at the HBO pattern, like Sex and the City, they did like three, you know, so there would have been a Sopranos movie at some point if Gandolfini was still alive. And then that would have answered the question, because would they have picked it up after that scene in the diner years later? You would know if he was dead or alive. I think James Gandolfini passing then really left it as you'll never know what's going to happen.
But hasn't Chase spoken on this?
Yeah, but he always plays. He's like Aaron Rodgers. He plays like the word games and he doesn't tell you something, but he's all vague in this and it's all.
Yeah, like, I don't think it needs to be. Now, again, I don't know. I'm not him. But this is not, like, people got to understand, this is not something that actually happened in reality. This is a creation by a fucking writer.
Speak for yourself.
He wrote it. Like, there is no, like, it's not real. There is no, oh, this happened and that was going to happen. No, it's whatever the writer in his mind intended. So only he knows the true answer of it. And right. I happen to agree that they didn't want to kill Tony on camera and have it end like that. But all signs are pointing to that was the end. But
here would be my rebuttal of that. If that's the case, then I think even though it's the writer's creation and it's his finale and it's what he, I do think you still owe it to your audience to give them something. I mean, listen,
I agree
you
with
don't,
that.
You don't have to, that's been proven out. He made the finale what it was, never really explained it, but I'm not going to be mad if someone's pissed off that they didn't get an answer on what happened in the last episode.
But think about that, right? Even with Seinfeld, obviously a completely different ending, but still people, for the greatest show ever, people have major issues with how Seinfeld ended. Now, we've had versions of it, whether it's on Curb or, you know, whatever, Jerry will address it in certain things. So it's a little bit different where Chase has really left it open and hasn't closed the book on it. But I don't think people would ever be happy. Whatever the ending was going to be, they wouldn't be happy with it.
Fair. But that's different because people are not happy with the Seinfeld finale, but they know what happened in the Seinfeld finale. The four of them went to jail. No one knows what happened in the Sopranos finale. Right. That's what I think the issue is. But when you look back and just us having this discussion, I think it's hard to say that it wasn't brilliantly done because it's still talked about. If you rewatch it, even if you've rewatched that scene a million times like I have, every time you watch it, there's still an intensity. Build up with Meadow parking and Don't Stop Believing and him and Carmella talking and him and I mean, it still works.
All right.
So I think it was brilliantly done. I wish you knew, you know, even if he would have come out after and said, okay, well, if you didn't really understand it, Tony does, you know, he set it up with the members only guy, jacket. Mm-hmm. The guy.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to think, oh, they just ate dinner and then moved on with their lives. But
yeah. I mean, what do people want? Like somebody to bring to the table a birthday cake? Oh, happy birthday, AJ, or whatever it may be. Like, it's not a happy family type show. There wasn't going to be a happy ending. Like, we all know where the life was going. It's either going to be Tony's dead or in jail eventually. Like,
well, I think everyone wanted confirmation that Tony was. But that's the other thing, too. It could have got. That's what I'm saying about the movie, if we would have gotten a movie, because maybe just Tony died. Maybe the guy shot Tony, but he didn't die. Maybe he shot the whole family. You don't. It's so open. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't shoot down any of those possibilities. So in a way, I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. I was just going to say, which is why, to your point, I do think it is brilliant, because Chase probably understood no matter how he ended it, nobody was going to be happy. So I'm going to lead everybody right to the very end of thinking what you think is going to happen, what you expect to happen, but I'm not going to show it and leave it open for whatever interpretation you want.
I so miss shows like that everybody watched at the same time. I mean, those days are over because everyone either binges or they watch things on their own time. There's nothing outside of live sports, which is why, like, the NBA is going to get $76 billion. There's nothing that people watch together anymore except for sports.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true, because even if it airs Sunday night at 9 p.m., Curb or whatever, not everybody's watching at the same time. Back then, you really didn't have a choice. You didn't watch it at 9, you missed it.
Everybody's mentality is, oh, I'll watch it in a couple of days. I'll watch it here. I'll watch it there. I'll watch it when I have this. I'll watch it when I wait for my wife. There's nothing where the majority of people are locked in at the same time, except for sports.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah.
Changed.
And that used to be fun. But, you know, the streaming world. I'm not going to go on a streaming rant, but that's a problem. Yeah. All right. That covers everything.
Okay.
Nice and tidy. Have a happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll get
that.
A report from you next week.
Yeah. I'll let you know how it went.
All right.
Use your imagination. Fade to black.
All right, Sal. We'll see you next week.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye. All right, my many, many thanks to Tom Brady. My thanks to Jim Miller. My thanks to Sal Licata. My thanks to you for listening. If you missed any recent episodes of SI Media with Jimmy Traina, go into the archives, check them out. Andrew Marchand from The Athletic was on the podcast last week. Talk about the latest sports media news. Charles Barkley 2 weeks ago. Kevin Harlan on the pod 3 weeks ago. Missed any of those interviews, go give them a listen. Subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina and rate and review on Apple. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week for episode number 500. Of the SI Media Podcast. I thank you for listening. Stay safe and take care.
Saving money on everything now at Menards. Create fresher, cleaner air with damp-rid products. Control the humidity in your space with a hanging bag moisture absorber. They're great for closets and laundry rooms. Grab a 3-pack on sale through September 8th. Save big on damp-rid moisture absorbers at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals. Save big.